This podcast is brought to you by Marcus Rodriguez. If you're looking to buy or sell your home in this competitive market and you're not too sure where to start, look no further than Merced's preferred realtor, Marcus Rodriguez. He'll make sure the process goes as easy as possible, and you can reach him at 209-554-1715. Visit his website, www.myagentmarcus.com, or email him, info@myagentmarcus.com. This episode is brought to you by Thor. If you're in the Central Valley area and you're looking to get a tattoo, look no further than this dude right here. He's a versatile artist that specializes in black and gray realism. He's located in Merced at the Merced Tattoo and Piercing Company, and if you'd like to get in contact with him, either stop by the shop or reach out to him on Instagram. His Instagram is @_Thor5E's. Once again, that's @_Thor5E's. This episode is brought to you by Be Junk Free Merced. Everybody has stuff that's taking up space, but not everybody has the time, energy, and equipment to do something about it. That's where Scott Levesey comes in. If you have stuff that's overtaking your garage, yard, that spare room, or even a storage unit, give Be Junk Free Merced a call. You can reach them at 209-233-1519, and they'll give you an estimate and get back to you as soon as they can. This episode is brought to you by Patriarch One. Patriarch One LLC is a website, email, domain management, and design company. They can create your website from startup, refresh your current website, and even deal with domain transferring. Not only do they build a website for you, but they partner and manage the entire domain for you. They offer promotional gear as well, like business cards, shirts, pens, and anything with your logo on them. If you want to get in contact with them, you can reach them at 408-728-8001. Visit their Instagram, patriarch1.llc, or email them, info@patriarch1.com. This podcast is brought to you by Duffy Murphy. Whether you need studio time, mixing and mastering services, or someone to clean up that podcast audio, he's your guy. And trust me, because he's my guy. You can reach him on Instagram @DuffyMurphy or email him duffy.murphy@yahoo.com. Thanks for tuning in to Real Talk and Whatnot, a Central Valley podcast, the podcast with the longest name ever. Thanks for tuning in, you guys. My name is Micah D'Ailey. I'm the host of the show. And if you're new here, this is a show where I highlight the talented individuals who live within the Central Valley of California, as well as people in general who are passionate about what they do. If you're watching this on YouTube, hello, how's it going? Make sure you're subscribed, you're liking the videos, you're commenting. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcast or Spotify, make sure you're following me, you're downloading the episodes, and you're just staying engaged any way you can. If you would like to follow me on Instagram, you can go ahead and do that at Central Valley Podcast or type in my name, Micah D'Ailey, and I'm sure it'll pop up. Alrighty, let's just jump into today's episode. Today, I'm joined by a really cool dude. His name is Matt St. Pierre. Matt St. Pierre is born and raised in Merced County. He was raised out in El Nido, or as he would say, El Nido, and then he went to college at San Luis Obispo, I believe. Oh, yeah, San Luis Obispo, got it right. He went to college out there. He met his wife, and he got a degree in business administration. After that, he went to San Francisco for 6 years, and what he basically did is he did faith-based community development work, and what he does is he basically helps rehabilitate people in the city who need it. So, you know, he did that for 6 years in San Francisco, and so, you know, people who are coming out of prison or people who are once homeless, people who need work experience and things like that, and he really helps them and puts them in the right direction. And so he did that, or work related to that, for about 6 years out in San Francisco. And then he came to Merced around the year 2016. And in 2016, he was walking around the neighborhood talking to the community. And the two main issues that emerged in the clearest points in the neighborhood was that they needed a safe enrichment of opportunity for kids and good jobs for adults. So those are the two things that he felt like the city needed more than anything, or two things that stood out to him. Of course, there's a lot of problems, but he said he had to narrow it down to what two things do you think like the city needed. And those are the two things. And so since then, in 2016, he's been working for this nonprofit called Restore Merced. Restore Merced is such a great organization, and they help different people get into like work programs for 9 to 12 months. They have an employment experience and a training program, so they give them the skills they need. They teach them things. They show them, you know, how to just be in the society and show them that, like, how to show up for work and just to be there when they need them, be their family, be their support group. Because sometimes when you come out of the like prisons or you come out from being homeless, you don't have a support group. So what they're doing is they're being there for those people. And so what he talks about in this podcast is how he got into this and how he did it and how he ended up back in Merced. And I truly, truly appreciate it. He's doing great work for the community. I want to thank Restore Merced and Matt St. Pierre and his whole team. I really, really appreciate you guys. So without further ado, you guys, welcome Matt St. Pierre.
This is it. Real talk. What not?
Real talk. That's it. Real talk.
My wife was always like, oh, like your lamp. And she's like, dang, your lamp's everywhere. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I know.
It keeps moving closer.
Front
and center.
Yeah, exactly. What type of lamp is that?
An 80s lamp. There you go. All those old bangs had like the green, the little green lights. Like,
banker's desk.
Oh, yeah, it is the banker's lamp. And it's funny, I saw a modern day version of that in a store, and it was the same exact design, but it was like more brown with like clear looking on the top. But I was like, oh, wow, they just were like, we'll just redo this.
Yeah, why break it if it, you know, redo whatever it is, you know, get those out right now. You know what they say, guys. They say it all the time.
Exactly. So we're already recording right now, and then we'll just cut in at some point of it. Oh, you're good. It's all good.
Make sure I don't have smoothie left in my teeth, too.
It's all good. So why don't you introduce yourself for people who may not know who you are, Matt?
Yeah, my name is Matt St. Pierre, and I am born and raised here in the Merced County region. My family's been farming in the area for a few generations.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. And so you grew up on a ranch out here? Or?
Yeah, out in El Nido.
Oh, El Nido.
Or El Nido, if you want to say it correctly.
Is that really how you say it?
That's, I believe, how you say it if you're using the Spanish pronunciation.
El Nido.
Yeah, El Nido, the nest.
Is that what it means?
The nest. Yeah, so we were the Hornets growing up. So
was there a school out there?
There is, yeah, El Nido Elementary School. So.
How many kids are?
Ooh, that's a good question. The population on the signs of the town,
that's why I was wondering,
is not very large, but it's a decent-sized school. Pulls from a number, you know, of the area kind of agricultural communities. Mm-hmm. And all my grandfather went there in kindergarten. He only spoke Italian when he started kindergarten.
Really?
And then I had my mom and her brother and sister and my cousins all went through school there. So,
dang.
Yeah.
And so, and then, so you went, you were born and raised in Merced. And then what did you go to school for originally?
Yeah. So I went to Cal Poly for college and studied business administration there. Okay. So, kind of one of those things where, you know, you had to declare when you're getting accepted.
Oh, trust me. I had seven different majors.
Yeah, I had zero idea what I wanted to study at 18 years old. And so thought business is a good general choice and we'll see where that takes me.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then so you did that and then you graduate and then you're like, what am I going to do with my life? Or
yeah, well, I had to figure it out quick because I got married at 22.
Oh, so, you get married before? Right after college,
school, right as we're finishing school.
Man, I want to give it to you because you went to school, like you went straight to a 4-year university and then graduated in 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Because I went to the JC for like 4 years and then I went to Stanislaus for a year and then I was like Starbucks was offering ASU online and I was like,
that's a good choice.
Sounds good. I'll do that one for free.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I grew up going to the Central Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking I was going to stay at the JC. I was maybe going to play baseball or something like that. And then as soon as I got that acceptance letter from Cal Poly, I knew it. I'm going to San Luis Obispo. That's the place. Both my parents went there. My older sister went there. Yeah. So grandfather even went there back when it was an all boys school. So
dang, it's generational.
It is. I guess that's how we
El Nido
do things.
And Cal Poly for your family.
I guess that's my
story.
Any
of your siblings go there too?
My older sister. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It was destiny, man.
My parents met. They were next door neighbors. They met in school when a piece of my dad's mail went to my mom's apartment.
And then he went and gave it to her.
Well, yeah. Or she did, you know.
Man,
like,
what
I
a
meet that guy.
What a love story. That sounds like a Nicholas Sparks movie.
Oh, there
right
you go.
There.
I think we're gonna pitch it soon. And then me and my wife met there as well. So yeah.
Wow. And where is your wife originally from?
So she's originally from Maryland, Baltimore.
And she came all the way over here?
Yeah, her dad was in the Navy. They moved out to the East Bay area when
she started
middle school. So she had middle school and high school in Pleasanton and then went to Cal Poly.
And is that kind of what drew you guys back to like the Bay? For a little while?
Yeah, you know, we kind of knew. We had our own experiences in college, both actually going to inner cities. I went to St. Louis. I spent a summer in St. Louis. Very different place than San Luis, even though they have the same name.
Yeah, yeah.
Slightly different.
We went to a wedding in St. Louis.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
I mean, I like St. Louis. Like Brian Womack?
Yes, yeah,
yes. Yeah, yeah. So we went
to... I have family there.
Oh, okay.
And my family there, crazy. I have a crazy uncle. Everybody's got a crazy uncle.
Or aunt, huh?
All of them. But probably have a few. But this uncle... was a successful toy business owner, like this zany toy store in St. Louis metro area that was growing, doing well. And he just kind of all of a sudden got connected to this church that had been in this inner city neighborhood with, like, you know, low income, higher crime rates, things like that. And the model was all these folks moved in on purpose to this neighborhood, like abandoned homes, like condemned homes. Mm-hmm. The city would literally give you a plot. Like, they were historic, over 100-year-old, gorgeous old buildings mm-hmm. that needed to be gutted and redone. They would give it to you if you were going to renovate it.
Oh.
And so a lot of them, you know, these families moved into this neighborhood. They started kind of investing in all kinds of ways in the community. And the church is now like 30 years old. But they have like I went to lead a youth job training crew they hired like 100 teenagers every summer in their neighborhood to do kind of construction work on the homes of people who couldn't afford it in the neighborhood that like needed this work
done.
Wow,
that's cool.
So I was a crew leader for that and kind of got introduced to that world.
And was that after college?
That was in the middle. That was right after my sophomore year of college.
Okay, and so over the summer or something, did you go out?
In the summertime. So live with them. My uncle and I got robbed at gunpoint in his garage, which was the moment, when I thought, okay, is this actually worth it? Or is this just kind of a cool experience that I'm thinking I'm going to be fine, you know, because I'm doing good stuff over the summer.
You're doing good stuff.
And for me, it was this recognition of like, okay, if this is what life is about, then I got to be all in. But if not, like, I'm finding a different spot to go. My wife did a similar deal, didn't get robbed, but she went to Detroit the next summer. Uh-huh. And when we had just started dating, just to kind of see if she could see herself doing something similar.
Oh, okay.
So then when we got married and we graduated, got married, and we were saying, okay, we want to live in a city because we want to do similar work to what each of us had done in those.
Give back. Kind
in those communities, yeah.
The communities that need the help.
Right. And for us, like, you know, even for us as Christians, like to us, that's at the center of actually what the Christian faith is, to say you're actually supposed to bring good news, you know?
Yeah.
And so what does good news look like in a community where, kids are suffering, where single moms are struggling, mm-hmm. like where someone can't get a job even though they would really love to work to provide? Like, what's good news? It's not just to tell them something.
Yeah.
You know, hey, God loves you. It's to actually say, and here's some proof of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's a job. You know, here's support for your family.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things. So we wanted to do that. We started looking at cities around the country that we had some connection.
Uh-huh.
And San Francisco was just one of those cities. So that's...
Oh, okay. And so you started... So that was the first city where you kind of started and implemented doing things. And did you... start everything from the ground up in San Francisco? You kind of joined somebody else?
Yeah, so we worked for like a campus ministry that's a global organization.
Oh, okay.
And they really didn't have a lot going on. They had a pretty small ministry in San Francisco, mm-hmm. at San Francisco State. But we got pitched this idea of, hey, why don't you come and help our students get connected to service opportunities throughout the city? Because there's obviously a lot of need in the city, and you can kind of help them see how, you know, if they're considering, like, being a follower of Jesus, how does that connect to, you know, caring about the Tenderloin, caring about the Bayview Hunters Point area? Like, what are those connections? So we got to kind of make the connection points with people doing great work in the city already, mm-hmm. and some college students, so they could start to get formed. You know, college is this time where you're figuring things out.
Yeah,
right?
We all
like,
know. Yeah,
trying a lot of things, figuring it all out, and so we thought, hey, this is a great chance that hopefully some students can see what is my future going to be? Even if I go on and make a lot of money, is that just for me? Or what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Like, and we got to play the role of helping them figure that out.
Yeah. That's really. Are you friends with like Ricky Franklin and Robbie Siverly and everything?
Yeah, well, and Ricky's older sister Eva. Like,
oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Her and her husband Jordan are like our best friends.
Oh, really?
They moved here during the pandemic and saved our lives. Yeah, they live on Bear Creek now. So,
That's cool. Well, I was wondering because when you're talking about you living in San Francisco and stuff like that, I was just, and I remember Robbie lived there and Ricky lived there all at the same time.
Robbie
so
lived like, in my one summer when I was gone. When my wife and I had to go do a summer project, it was called, with the ministry we worked for, Robbie did an internship. He worked at Deloitte, did an internship, and lived in our apartment with another dude. Yeah, yeah, it was good.
That's really funny.
He took good care of my brand new IKEA chair I had just gotten at the time. I think he became his chair that summer. Yeah.
then he wore it out probably that summer. You're like,
guy.
Man,
he's
this
a
used
big
to
guy.
Be.
Yeah.
That's really funny. And so one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast is on the podcast, I always talk about like the revitalization of downtown Merced, talk about the things going on within the community. And I always talk about like El Cap Tioga and all these other new restaurants opening up. But a lot of times people don't really see stuff that's kind of going behind the scenes.
Right.
And so what kind of drew you to come back here? And 2016, is that when you kind of moved back?
2016.
So what was that kind of like, when were you like, I want to move back to like my hometown. I want to try to do what I'm doing here, but in my hometown.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really kind of came through by surprise through some conversations with my good friend from growing up, Caleb Medefin.
Oh, okay.
So my wife and I at the time, we had our first daughter. We're living in San Francisco, one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, I was going to say.
She was sleeping in a closet, basically, for the first year of her life. And we were...
Little Harry Potter child, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think we were kinder to her than his aunt and uncle. But yeah, so we were trying to figure out, you know, what's sustainable for life. Like, what do we want? What do we even value now that we're having kids? Like... Mm-hmm. And we're both having to work full time, and it's just kind of a rat race, you know, to stay on, to just keep making it there.
Especially to stay afloat in San Francisco and on debt when you're paying
$2,000,
$3,000 for a one-bedroom apartment.
Totally. And yeah, we had a steal. A friend of ours owned the place we were living in. She ran a nonprofit we helped out with, and we were paying like $2,000 a month for this one bedroom. And that was a steal.
That's a steal,
In the Bayview, right across the hill from where Candlestick Park used to be. I was there. I was living there when they tore down Candlestick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
We used to have Niners fans park on our street and then walk the game all the way from there. Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, it was – so it's just thinking, okay, how do we simplify our life? And that might mean making some changes because – we're not going to be able to simplify a lot and keep affording to live here. At that time, she was working actually in tech, and I was working at a nonprofit in the Tenderloin, and it just, yeah, it wasn't going to work. So anyway, we were thinking about how to simplify. Caleb started talking to me about the idea of bringing some of that work that I'd been doing in San Francisco, community development, economic development kind of work, into Merced. And specifically, you know, even just having roots at the church here downtown, CPC. So this historic church that's in the middle of Merced, in the middle of downtown, without a lot of connection, though, to the neighborhood of downtown. And a lot of the folks at the church asking, what would it look like for us to be a good neighbor? Like, do our neighbors even know we're here?
Yeah.
And how could we actually be good news in this community? And so that was part of the vision getting started, is how can we create some pathways for other folks, like even at that church, to get to know neighbors and to step in and want to you know, say we care about your neighborhood, our neighborhood, even if you're not a part of our church.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a lot of the vision when we first decided to come get started.
Yeah, because we talked, I think, in 2016, probably.
In the old church sanctuary, my old office.
Exactly. And that's all I remember from that conversation, really, is that I had a really good conversation with you.
Yeah.
And I don't really know the subject we talked. And you were trying to, when I was reading your little mission statement about, like, you talk to people in the community to figure out, like, what it needed or whatever.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I was like, I mean, that's probably why he was talking to me. But I just remember, like, we talked for, like, 2.5 hours. And then I was like, all right, man, catch you later. Like,
I was loving it. I had a vision at the time for your life, but I just didn't share it with you then. We were looking at a business idea, actually, in downtown.
Was
that
it
we're
the, wanting to do. The like using the
Like shipping containers, multi-vendor food lot idea. And so you see a lot of those in other places.
And I still think one would be perfectly, especially on the church parking lot across the street or something right there.
Yes. So I could see that you could be the face of something like that, but now you're the face of something else.
Hey,
so
maybe the real talk could be the face of that.
There you go. There we go. Okay, let's get back and talk.
exactly. And so, so then you come back to the community and you're kind of trying to figure out where to start, right? You're trying to figure out, what angle do I do? How can I get involved with the community? And was there any businesses or people that you linked up with that kind of helped start? Because I saw you used to be working with somebody else, and then you became a nonprofit, right, in 2018?
Yeah, so looking for – and that's the idea, too, behind our work. Like, we try to practice this thing called asset-based community development, or ABCD. Which is what it is let's start with the idea of what already exists in a community. What are the strengths? Not just anyone can walk in and say, oh, there's a need, right?
Yeah.
Like, start pointing out all that's wrong with the place. Mm-hmm. And especially, though I love Merced, I'm from here, we know it's really easy to do with this place.
No, and then, so that's, oh God, ruin everything.
Yeah, like the whole machine,
No, but no, and that's the thing, too, that the podcast is like growing up. Everyone, Merced, talking crap about the area. And the whole, I say Merced because I'm from Merced, people who are listening, but like, I mean, the whole Central Valley in general, you just have people who just talk bad about the area. Right. And I always say it's a lot easier to talk bad about something than it is to give something a compliment.
Totally.
Because give something a compliment, you have to think, what am I going to compliment them on?
Right.
You could say, blah, 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 it's boring. You know what I mean? And that's easy to do. Right. But, and that's one of the reasons with the podcast, it's just like, like, yeah, maybe like we used to not be have the things that other places have, but the pandemic showed me more than anything is that, hey, we have everything a big city could have, especially when everyone in a big city was working at home for a year and a half. You know what I mean?
And started leaving those big cities and started leaving with more space.
Exactly. Yeah. And not as expensive and everything else. I don't know exactly what I was cutting off on.
No. Yeah. Well, you asked how we started out, who we worked with, and so yeah, we worked with, actually we got started with a very like-minded organization that does great work in the area called Lifeline CDC. Mm-hmm. They work in Winton, actually.
Oh, okay.
Have a community center in Winton, and they also have a community center in the Loughborough and the Meadow Apartments in the Loughborough area.
Oh, so they strategically put themselves in locations.
Practicing that asset-based community development. Mm-hmm. Their founder or their director, Monica Grassley, she is incredible and has done this kind of with her life and is so good at building community and drawing the strengths out of people before they can see it themselves.
That's
cool. And so she, as we started talking, I realized all the things that she was doing in ways that they were similar to what Caleb and I had been talking about starting. We had some talks and they were willing to, which is not a fun thing to do if you're an organization, by the way, but they were what's called our fiscal sponsor, where they say you can exist under the umbrella of our organization. Yeah. We can run things separately, but they kind of provide the admin support and stuff so that you can do that. Mm-hmm. And so really what she did is she said, well, yeah, we're not in downtown yet. I love that you want to focus in downtown. We'll house you all and you can run things through
us. Be a little branch on downtown until you get your...
Yeah. And then you're able to hit the ground running when you get there because you're not having to jump through all the hoops of getting your 501c3 and getting your board together and all the steps that come that I was going to find out in a couple of years, to getting your own organization up and running. So it was huge. We got to start off working with them, and that was a gift.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And then so did you – So you went to school, but then did you get your master's in anything or?
Yeah. So when I was in San Francisco, I started a seminary program.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And so
at that point, were you thinking about doing like being a pastor or something like that?
I'd always thought about it, but I always didn't fully fit that either because I also have always been interested in business and the way you can change a community through business and the ways that you can change a community through all kinds of different avenues.
Yeah.
So there's things I really enjoy about, kind of church-based or pastoral ministry, but then I always love like the idea of starting a food shipping container, food lot. My mind's always going to these other ideas. And they don't have a lot of pastors at those, but I started kind of figuring that out, but I got a chance to go to a perfect program that was actually built for people. All my colleagues in the cohort were in cities around the country, so New York and San Francisco and L.A., and everybody's in these similar contexts where you really have, like, a really diverse population. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of, like, economic disparity, and churches are more thinking maybe outside the box in terms of how do you bring good news in those places, And so I got to go as a part of that program. So I was full-time school. My school's in Michigan. It was an online program, but you go back for a week every semester. So there's in-person components, which really made it great. But I was able to do that and work full-time. So it was a total of four years to do that program. So two in San Francisco and then the first two back here in Merced.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dang. So when we met up that day, I was still a student, I think.
And what is it? It's a theology degree or what is it?
It's called a Master of Divinity.
Master of Divinity.
So I guess I've mastered the divine. And if you have any questions, just let me know.
I can answer everything.
Yeah, here we go. Shoot from the hip. Yeah.
No, that's it. No, I was just curious because I knew like that's a little different than going your normal master's. I mean, it's the same but different.
No, totally. Yeah, it was good for me. It was definitely a good fit. And I think it has enhanced my work. So I actually am ordained in that denomination, but I'm not ordained to pastor our local church. I'm ordained to run Restore Merced because our denomination sees the work of Restore Merced as the work of the church. So
you said that you were under that other company for a while, and then in 2018 you became an actual nonprofit, right?
Yeah.
And so how does that like transition kind of work?
Yeah. So, well, the reason we did it is because we were about to get more complex. Like for those first 2 years, I was the only Restore Merced employee.
It was easier, huh? Yes. It was like,
but we were actually in this process of, as we got to know the community when we first came here And we got to know, I would just walk downtown all the time. When I say downtown, our area of focus has always been, you know, from which you could argue this is not the totality of downtown Merced, but from 16th Street back to the railroad tracks, and then from G to M, because those main thoroughfares really like change the feel, like you're crossing into a different neighborhood, you know? And so we live on 21st Street, the office is on 19th Street. But we just walk the community all the time and try to just talk to people and find out, what do you like about your neighborhood? What gifts, you know, do you bring? What, what do you want to see happen here? But all those conversations, and then other organizations and churches, and learning from what was already happening. A couple of main things that rose to the surface as kind of primary pain points were safe places for kids to go when they're not in school. Which is funny because, you know, I grew up in El Nido. And you know, growing up, it took 20 minutes to 30 minutes to get anywhere that I wanted to go. Which, if you're an extroverted kid, growing up on a ranch is not the easiest.
It's cool for, like when you're I used to always love going to my friends' houses out in the country, but I can see on the opposite side when you're like, you have to beg your mom to drive 40 minutes to drop, you know, drop you off somewhere and then come
meanwhile,
back.
All your friends are like in the summer swimming at each other's house or playing baseball, and you're out like pulling weeds in the cotton field because your grandpa doesn't like weeds, you know?
And so, no one's going to see these
Dude, just cutting down right
Duffy
below.
Duffy, he's an almond farmer. Nice.
You feel that. So, you know, I would ask people when they'd say it's too far, you know, I'd say, okay, what about the Boys and Girls Club, though? That's right here.
Basically downtown.
And they would say it's too far. And I'm like, well, what do you mean it's too far? But then the more I was in the neighborhood, you see how, like, a lot of times the kids are actually, while both parents are either at work or the single-parent household and they're working, the kids are having to walk everywhere, get there themselves. So the parents are thinking, I don't want my kid to cross M Street on their own, 16th Street on their own, the railroad tracks. So they have to do all of that just to get the Boys and Girls Club. And so that was one piece. And so we that started small, but we started a kids program. It was called Downtown Kids Club. We'd work with John Muir Elementary School, then eventually Hoover Middle School, because those are the neighborhood schools for the area of our focus.
And that's just on the right side of 16th Street, right? I mean, like over past the freeway, right?
For Hoover?
John Muir.
Muir is just on the other side of the train tracks. So they're on. It's on like 25th, 26th.
Okay, gotcha.
So we started that, and then the other pain point was good job opportunities, and the whole time, really, in Merced during this time, you know, there's been some pretty good jobs available, good paying jobs, but there's clearly a disconnect between folks in our community who could use the good jobs and their ability to get those available jobs. And so we actually started a job readiness class that we used an existing curriculum, but an 8-week-long class for folks with barriers who are either unemployed or underemployed. And then try to find job placements for them, and had a little bit of success, but really 8 weeks goes by pretty fast. You know?
I was going to say, I saw that on the website. What is your website? So Duffy can look it up.
Yeah, it's restoremerced.org.
Gotcha. Yeah, and so on these programs, it's like, you're basically to facilitate people in the community, and so part of it is people from who like, or is it part of it people who like went to prison and need some job experience? And is it just people who kind of need that little extra help, or is there a specific like?
Yeah, so we say generally that we employ people with barriers to employment. What those typically are maybe having been previously incarcerated, coming out of substance dependency, homelessness. A lot of times, all three of those things at different points. But really, if you think about those barriers to like getting and keeping a good job. You have to also think about things like childhood trauma and the way you carry that with you. Because that's the thing that if you just stuffed it down your whole life and never kind of try to get the tools to deal with it, that's the thing that flares up and makes you cuss your boss out and get fired on the spot. And you're not actually mad at your boss even though you thought you were. It was just triggering
you something. You haven't dealt with underlying conditions. Or
and so,
like
and by no means are we the only entity that can handle that kind of thing. So we work with community partners like, you know, counsel. We actually will pay for someone to go to six sessions of private counseling to just start that work, you know, and get some of those tools. And we try to provide it through community that we you know, bring to folks as well, just that support. And we call it family. That's at the center of what we do. because that's why family is supposed to be at its best, right? It's the support network around you that isn't going to like necessarily do everything for you, but they're going to be there to like keep pushing you when you need to be pushed. They're gonna catch you when you're falling back. You know, they're gonna kind of help you navigate and try to. You want to see your family succeed. You know, so that's kind of what we try to build,
and the sense of community, basically, right? And that's something before I started this podcast that I didn't really think about community that much. I don't know why. It didn't seem that at the time that I always had my community of friends, basically. And I was like, I got my group of friends. That's all I need. And I remember thinking, like, how do you make new friends when you're older? Like, you just don't. Like, I used to think that. And now, since I started this podcast, I feel like I've made so many friends. You know what I mean? Yeah. But what always gets brought up is a sense of community.
Right.
And that people kind of are always longing for that sense of community. Yeah. They always, like... And it's something that I didn't realize until I felt like I started building this own community with a podcast of that the Central Valley is it's underrepresented, basically. Right. Like, people kind of, like, they think of California. It's like San Francisco, LA, I always say. But the sense of community in Central Valley, it's cool because it's like if you're from Merced, Modesto, Bakersfield, or even Sacramento or the outskirts of Sacramento, it's like you're a Valley kid and you were raised a certain way, and you probably remember going to swimming holes, you remember packing up with your friends, going in a car, doing something. And it's something that, like, I think that a lot of people have just thought, like, it's this community over here, it's this community over here, but in whole, it's like the whole Central Valley is a community.
Right.
And it's just cool to see, like, and then you're on the on a different side of this, like you're like this one, you're focusing on Merced and the community of Merced, but you're focusing on, like, how do we rehabilitate, basically, in a way, people who maybe are getting a second chance, but instead of just throwing them out to the wolves, like, it seems like a lot of times, like, let's say you're, like, incarcerated or something like that, it seems like it's like, okay, you're free, but now I have a black mark on my record and no one wants to hire me. So how do I go integrate in society again without falling back into the things that I did?
Well, and that was a cool thing about coming back here. That's not the way. At San Francisco, I was always going to be a transplant, right? Mm-hmm. Coming back here, and one of the first times I walked the neighborhood, I run into a guy who I went to Golden Valley High School with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right away we connect. And we start up a weekly basketball game over here at the Hoffmeister Center with other guys.
Still got that going on?
Well, we did. I tore my ACL meniscus, and it hasn't happened since. But I think I'm back. We got Seth Beardsley moving back
new ball,
this summer.
Dude.
So,
yeah.
So we'll get it going
again.
We used
to always call it new ball.
There you go.
Because it would be like, we're all this, like, we're all scrubs playing some basketball.
Yes.
And now it's, if we can get, like, a 30-year-old league where it's like, no one's trying too hard, let's do that.
Even when I try playing it in shape, I'm, like, 10 years older than everybody, and I'm like, oh.
In shape, you got to worry about people getting fights and everything else.
I got some guys, though, that want to play. So, yeah, we'll do it.
No,
sure.
Exactly. As soon as I heard that Seth was moving back, I was like, new ball's back, baby.
Yeah.
Like, doing this.
Oh, yeah. No, it's good. So, yeah, no. So, you know, there's an instant trust there because I'm actually from this community.
Yeah.
And there's
and
a reason why I would be walking around downtown Merced because, you know, this is where I'm from. And, it means something. And so I think that I found more and more. I mean, there's hard things about leaving a place that I loved in San Francisco too, but more and more I feel a lot more purpose. And then this idea that you're from here, my family's from here, the connections that you can bring other people in. So then when we're helping someone look for a job opportunity, if we actually believe in them, regardless of what's on their past or in their record, if we vouch for them to people that we know, there's a trust there because, and, like, I know they wouldn't steer us wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I know that these guys are going to tell us how it is. And and so you get that in a community like this in ways that I don't think you do other places.
Well, especially if you're looking at something in the scale of San Francisco, it's like how many million people live there, you know what I mean? Where it's Merced, there's 100,000 people in this community. And so you can take the time and literally, like, especially if you're focusing on one area, it's like, I can just walk and introduce myself to all the local people. And people like the sense of community. So if they see you doing something and purposeful for the community, they're like, how can I help out? And it's just like, well, hey, like, I have people who, like, might need jobs in, you know, a month, 2 months or whatever. Would you be interested in employing them? Just because and they know that they worked with you for however long they worked with you for. So there's there's active change going on in the community.
Right.
And that's the reason, or one of the main reasons, is like, I wanted you on. It's just like, I've seen you for the past, I texted him last night and I was like, hey, like, what exactly is your job title?
What do you do here?
I showed my wife the message. I was like, does this look okay to send? Like, yeah. I was like, I think I know what he does, but I just like wanted to like make sure like I knew what you do. And it was exactly what I thought you did. Yeah. It was like you help people who maybe aren't getting the chances that they deserve, get chances in that same community again, basically.
Yeah.
To put it shortly, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, definitely. And even to the so then there's the missing link, right? So we were running that class, finding work, but having challenges because some people had huge gaps in their work history. Some people had never worked a job before. So we realized there's a need to be the first employer for someone, because how much easier is it to actually find a job when you have a job, especially if your current employer is willing to be a reference for you as you're looking for that next job.
Mm-hmm. And you're literally facilitate them to their next job.
Yes.
It's almost like you're helping them out, like you're giving them the job experience and helping them get that next job too.
Absolutely.
So let's say after that say they want to move on from that job, it's like, hey, I have two good references for me right here. Mm-hmm. And because I was watching the one or the videos that you sent me, really well done and everything, and it was just cool because it was just like, you know, these guys and these girls are so grateful that, you know, to somebody else that, I don't know, because let's say, like, I worked at Starbucks for a long time, and one of the guys, like, he was like, I got a job at Starbucks, and he's super happy about it. And it's just like, employers want people who are, like, happy that they got a job where they are. They don't want people who are, like, they're going to work, like, oh, I got to work at Starbucks or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why wouldn't employers and people want to work with people who want to work,
right?
Who want to put in the hours and stuff like that versus, yeah, we might hire this 18-year-old who's never worked before, who doesn't have any job experience, you know what I mean? But it just, I see you doing a lot of good in the community. And then you also teach different, like, classes with this?
Yeah, so we provide a job. So, like, if we look at what we do, actually the heart of what we do is people development. The job, we look to do good work. We do litter abatement or general cleanup, junk hauling kind of work. Mm-hmm. That's the work we do. For contracts where we generate revenue so that we can actually create these jobs and pay people. So it's a sustainable source of income. It's not dependent on donations. But in order to see someone grow, the job's a part of that, but it's not the whole picture. There's also a need to kind of keep working on those other areas that
like
we're talking
about before,
right?
Yeah.
And so we have a job readiness class where you go over the soft skills. We bring in local employers from the community that they get to meet. We're all about increasing, you know, capital, social capital, relational capital. When you think about what it takes for anyone to be successful,
it's really I'm gonna cut you off. It's really cool that you like took your business aspects of it and like you're using it in a community in a way to enrich that same community. And it's just really cool because like you're like the theology version and the portion and then your business portion. I can really tell that like you're passionate about it, but like the fact that you're saying like bring the capital of like, the relationships.
It's all about capital, baby. Yeah.
Capitalism, baby, America.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. We won't go there. But if that's the system, how do we help people benefit from it too, you know? But yeah, the idea being this, we all need, if we're going to be successful, an ecosystem of support, right? Now, you don't grow if you don't have the right ecosystem that you're in. And that's like your community, that's the people supporting you, that's like the opportunities that you have afforded to you. And every story is different, right? Yeah. Not everyone's story is the same. And we're all a mixture of things that happen outside of our control and then choices that we've made as well. Often in simplistic, you know, arguments, you try to say it's either all one of those or all the other, when in reality, we're all a very
complex
mixture.
It's like nature versus
nurture.
It's like, well, it's not nature versus nurture. It's nature and nurture.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
People always
both
try to separate
and.
It.
Yeah. That's good.
No, that is. Yeah. And so when you came back to Merced, you started like the enrichment program, the kids club, and like multiple other things. So what kind of programs are there for people today that if they're interested or if they want some help or kids need a place, like what things do you have going on? I know we talked about them, but kind of just maybe go in more detail.
Yeah. So we actually have really focused our work and really starting this year, I think it was partly what the way the pandemic kind of forced everyone to say, what do we really do well and what do we exist
for? That happened to me. It was the first time I was like, well, what do I want to do? Do I want to, I was going to be a teacher for, that's what I was going to do in college. So that's what I said I was going to teach something, didn't know what, took like 7-8 years to graduate. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a teacher, become a substitute. And I was like, oh, I think I kind of like this. And then it was just like, I'm going to try to take this test and social sciences that I don't really care about, but I'm
my
just going to try
the same thing.
And I was trying to do it, and I took it twice. I was 1 point off one time, 2 points off the second time, and then I kind of was like, pandemic hit, and I was like, what do I want to do? And it's like, I had always liked photography and videography, and I originally wanted to do that, like graduating, and then for one reason or another, just didn't. And it's just like, I feel like a lot of people during the pandemic kind of got to the point where it's like, well, what do I want? What do I want to focus on? Mm-hmm. And that's how this podcast was born. You know what I mean? We never thought that it is what it, we never thought we could get a studio or like, right. You know, grow to where it is now. And it's not that we're like that big either, but it's just like, yeah. It's cool that people, I get messages saying like, hey, I like what you're doing. And like those messages is all I want. Like,
yeah,
it's a full-time job. We're all interns here basically.
Yeah. Well, that's literally what we do is to help somebody. So our focused work is now really with adults where it's connecting with them while they're still in a place of instability and helping them see something they maybe have never seen before. You actually have gifts, skills, interests that would be helpful for your whole community. And a lot of times people have heard the opposite all the time growing up. A lot of people heard, hey, you're worthless. You're never going to amount to anything.
Yeah.
Don't even try. Then they get that reinforced at school. You're bad. You keep getting in trouble. You're a bad kid. You're never going to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And they just start to believe that at some point, internalize that, believe that, and then live that out too.
Yeah.
And then our goal is to come along and say, hey, no, we can still see what's in you. Like, start naming those specific things. Like you said, it's a lot easier to say what's wrong than to give that compliment.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's look at those specific things that we can already see in you. They start seeing some of those things themselves. They identify, oh, this is work I think I'd actually enjoy, where going to work wouldn't just be a necessary evil to survive, but would be something where I feel like I'm living right out of what I'm good at, how I'm wired, like what I was made to do. Mm-hmm. So we try to help people identify that.
And through doing that, have you like, obviously like when you first started, you're trying to figure out what questions are we asking them, what things, and through it, have you like gotten down to like a cycle where it's like, you know, like you know what to expect now, and you know kind of what ways to encourage people that maybe you didn't when you were first starting it.
Yeah, and every person is different, right? So that's part of the art of it is you got to learn how someone's wired, what makes them tick. You think about it like being a good coach. We probably all had good coaches and bad coaches.
Yeah.
The bad coaches were the ones that were trying to relive their glory days through you.
Yeah.
And the good coaches are those that are like really saying, let me get the best out of you because you're going to be happiest when you're fully operating to your potential. And then it's saying, but what motivates you? What level of pushing you is it? Mm-hmm. What level of encouraging you even when you've messed up is it to get you to like, you know, really give your best? So that's really our job is to try to be a good coach and not just relive glory days, but to say, okay, look, you can do this. We are going to hold you to a standard because you can do the standard and you're going to be happier like when you're doing it. And one of the cool things that we've seen is a lot of people that come through working with us, they could be in about the same position if they just lived on assistance.
Yeah.
But they start coming to a job where they feel like they're contributing to something and they start to love the way it feels. Mm-hmm. And then they say, oh, I could keep going from here. This is just
the beginning
point, you know? And that's why we try to place people with good employers too, because we have a lot of those in the area. Now, there are jobs where you're basically just going to be plugging like a spoke in the wheel, but we don't encourage people to go into jobs like that. Instead, we say, let's help you find an employer who's values their employees, who values the life of their employee outside of work, and who will look for the good in you and give you opportunities to keep growing and moving up, you know? So, and there's a lot of good employers like that in our area. We have a lot of great partners.
There is. Well, and we always have the small town vibe in Merced, and like I said, all the Central Valley towns. Like, it's just that I think that, and since the pandemic, it seems that everybody has come together a little more. To me, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just like I started this podcast that I feel that way.
Yeah,
but
you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing it. So I feel like
everybody's doing it.
Exactly. Come on, kids, jump on the train.
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, no, exactly. But it seems that like a lot of people are coming together now more than ever. And so do you guys have like a number at all of like how many people you've been able to help and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And how do people, if they want help, how do you find them? How do they come to you?
That's a good question. Numbers wise, we have had 40 people that we've hired into the work program, transitional employment, since we started 3.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have placed 25% of those people into long-term jobs in the area. We've placed to places like the LCAP Tioga, Modern Air HVAC, Matt Migliozzo Construction, Starbucks, great local employers.
And so how did you build the relationships with these employers?
Some of them were people I knew, like
prior?
Matt Migliozzo since I was was a child.
Yeah, well, it's funny. My cousin lives in or rents at his house.
There you go.
Or his old house.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I know Matt.
So great people. Matt's in our video.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, I saw yeah.
And then, you know, Modern Air, we got connected to just like value their employees. That's an employee owned company,
yeah.
right? So wherever you start there, you are beginning to vest interest in the company,
mm-hmm.
Like you would at a Google or, you know, a company like that. The LCAP from day one have actually just been a great partner. We got to know them when they were just getting started mm-hmm. On their work. And gosh, that's a great place to work that values people. Mm-hmm. We've placed three people there. One of them's a supervisor now. Mm-hmm. Basically, the majority of the maintenance department are former employees of ours.
Oh, really?
And they have great maintenance. Their head engineer, Costa, is an awesome guy. The whole staff, Robin, their GM, would come to our job training
I just
class.
Met her. So okay. I did a photography shoot for them at the manager.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I just started working with them, too.
Nice.
Yeah, they're very nice.
Yeah.
But so I just started doing some stuff with them, and they're just super nice people. And yeah. and it's cool because it's like, it's something so different that Merced hasn't seen in a while. You know what I mean? At least like that type of right. that type of business.
Right. And with excellence kind of in every area.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not only like aesthetically pleasing, but right. work-wise and everything
right.
else. And then you do stuff with UC students too, or?
We have in
the past.
I saw
something
yeah.
in the thing that you sent me, yeah. you like would help facilitate UC students getting jobs too, or did I read that wrong?
Well, yeah, we haven't quite done that piece. We've been a placement for people through their Center for Community Engagement to work. That was mostly within our kids' work, which mm-hmm. we've kind of actually handed off to partners now.
Okay,
we're focused
gotcha.
On the work with adults. One thing that's cool is so we have some good partnerships. So like I said, our specialty is connect with someone when they're still in a place of instability, help them build
the stability,
the community, but then recognize what they're good at. And then here we have partners where we can funnel people depending on how they're wired. So one of those is Bitwise Industries.
Oh, okay.
Right?
So you're going to work with them too?
So one of our current employees is about to start, you know, is going through their pre-apprenticeship classes and hopefully going to do the apprenticeship they offer.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great pathway towards, you know, a great job in the tech industry.
Yeah.
Another pathway is Merced College, partnering with them, their vocational training school.
Oh, so doing some like trade schools,
yes,
basically.
And they've been an incredible partner to us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one place that we look to funnel people as well. Another one would be the hotel, and they started with Merced College, the hospitality school that they're running now. So if you're wired more towards that, and their whole idea, the hotel's, you know, working with Merced College on that, the LCAP, but they're doing it for the whole hospitality industry locally. They hope to just raise the whole hospitality
yeah.
industry up through training people.
That's you know, awesome.
Those skill sets. Yeah.
Yeah, because like sometimes people look at businesses and they're like, oh, they want people to stay there, or they want to bring money to themselves or whatever. But it's cool to hear that. Like, no, they just. And that's what it feels like with all the revitalization of downtown. It's not like us versus you. More and more, it seems like it's like downtown is becoming something that maybe it was intentionally built for, or was, you know, maybe in like when our parents were growing up or something like that.
Right.
Because they used to have like the drive or the drive bys or whatever. Yeah. When everyone was just getting the
yeah, maybe that's a bad
yeah,
term
maybe not
for
drive
it.
By. Blah 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 blah. I'm just kidding. What are they called?
The cruise, like,
the cruises.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a movie all about it. Look up what movie it is. It's George Lucas directed a movie in
nice.
Modesto, and it takes place in Modesto.
Star Wars. Yeah.
No. Star Wars. What is Star Wars?
Yeah.
No, look it up. George Lucas. He did a movie that was all about Modesto.
Yeah.
And it took place there.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's all about how it just takes place on one night. And it's when everybody's cruising the strip
it's
downtown.
It's like cruising the main drag.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of Dazed and Confused.
Oh, yeah.
What was it? Oh, I don't know. It's not. It's not loading up here, Duffy.
What? Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry. I was like, what did you? I was like, you're not typing anything.
Oh, it must be frozen.
I know.
Well, Nido Elementary School's on there. I see that. That's cool.
You're good. What was it called, though? Yeah, American Graffiti. You've never seen that movie?
Well, I've heard the movie, but somehow I haven't watched it, but I'm not watching it.
Well,
I'm gonna take care of that.
I recently, I like watched it during the pandemic, so I'm not a... Yeah, American Graffiti.
Okay, you know, I definitely have heard of
it. Yeah, so cruising, not drive-bys, you guys. But everybody, my parents used to tell me, so everybody, like in the 70s and 80s, they would just basically, everyone would get in the car, and back then it blows my mind, because you could buy like... like 65, 66 Mustang for like $1,000. Like, it's, I don't know what happened with inflation. Yeah. But, now
it's
like, that.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Inflation's a thing.
Yeah. It's a, but it's like.
Capitalism.
Yeah. But it's like, how did it raise 30 times that but now for like a new car?
Totally.
You know what I mean? It's just so
well,
wild.
Even used cars, man. We're trying to get some vans.
Dude.
Right now. It is not easy to get vans.
Yeah. It's the chips.
Or trucks.
Right? It's the microchips, right? Isn't it that there's a shortage in chips? And that's why there's no PS5s either. It's because, like, it's like, and I'm like, hey, how about we just make cars dumb again? Can we do that?
We can't have good things anymore.
Yeah, totally.
And that's what I think, even, right, you call downtown Central Merced now. Mm-hmm. And what I love about that is it's, you could call it a boundary area. It's where people from a lot of different areas actually could feel equally, however you want to look at it, equally uncomfortable or equally comfortable.
Yeah, congregate down there
too. And so you're going to bring the groups together that in this part of the city that you probably won't bring together in North Merced or
South Merced, or
West or East, you know. So that's a cool thing. And that's one of the reasons why we love being in this part of the community too. But even to answer your question too around you know, how could someone get involved?
Mm-hmm.
I can't share anything yet because it's not official.
Mm-hmm.
But we
hypothetically.
Just applied for a contract that would really be able to help us scale significantly what we do to where we could have closer to 40 to 50 people at one time working with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll know in about 2 weeks if that's going to happen or not.
Uh-huh.
And it's exciting because there's a lot of folks out there that have asked about men and women who would want to be a part of this, even people in that kind of youth demographic aging out of, like, say, juvenile hall or foster care system.
Yeah, yeah.
That can go up to 25, even 30 years old and still be talking about a youth population there. But we're looking to just bring more folks into this, but with the continued focus on the development of the individual. So we have partners where we find candidates. So the Merced Rescue Mission.
Okay, gotcha.
The jail. So we're going to...
Is there a new Merced Rescue Mission?
Well, what they actually had to do, because they lost their building, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't want to... Yeah.
So they rechanged. They actually just did build a new campus on Cone Avenue that's beautiful. It's half of it. There's half of it more.
Or the houses that they were building? So the mayor came on and talked about building houses and homes for different people.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the mission, but they're doing a lot. The city's been doing a lot of efforts around that, or working with a lot of folks in the county around that. The rescue mission pivoted their model when they lost their building, and they started renting homes in the city. So they actually have multiple homes over by, like, where the dog park is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Off
gotcha.
Of Yosemite. Uh-huh. So they have a men and women's program houses over there. They have what they call SLEs, or sober living houses, over there. Their new facility, they have like 10 veterans that they're housing. There's families that they're housing already out there.
That's
and
really
there's like
cool.
respite care, they call it. So if someone's released from the hospital and doesn't have a home to go to, they get released over here to the housing.
That's really cool.
So they're doing great stuff. They're an incredible partner for us. The jail is another partner, and what we're looking to do is actually start going into the jail, getting to know people while they're still there, building trust, building relationship. And then our goal would be you get out of jail, you're released, and in that first week, we're going to give you a job interview and a job offer and say, here's a family, here's a place where you belong.
Yeah.
Before you return to some of the old places,
yeah.
the old people.
Or go back to your old routine or
right.
whatever.
And just, you know, so that'll be one avenue where we're finding people. WorkNet, is, you know, through workforce development is another one for us. But really anyone who's feeling like, yeah, that's me, like I got barriers to employment, like we'll say let's go through the interview process and you will be able to determine is this a good fit. Because in many ways, it's kind of like going to school. It's like a period of time, right? We usually employ people for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
You're working on yourself. We do part-time employment, so you have time to work on removing barriers so that when you move out into the job you're really excited about, you're not going to get tripped up or get snagged and not keep that job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's take care of that stuff now. Let's practice everything every employer is going to want.
Yeah.
Dependability, right? Integrity,
time.
Work ethic,
yeah.
like a team player, you know, all those things. So do that with us.
While you're helping them and you can
yes. –
say it in a way that they're already trusting you. They already know that you're behind them.
Right.
So you, hearing it from you guys is going to be a lot better than hearing it from a boss that you just started working for. You know what I mean? Prepares them for if that boss has that conversation, like you're saying.
Right.
Maybe somebody has some past trauma or something. They're not going to lash out. Where if they lash out at you, you're going to be like, hey, like, let's talk about why you did that or something
right.
like that.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. So the chance to grow. Yeah. When I get cussed out, when you cuss me, then we can just talk about it. okay, well, how does this not happen again?
Well, in that case.
Yeah. Let's practice right now. No. But yeah, so we are looking to just kind of offer that more broadly to folks and are really excited about mm-hmm. that. It's really cool to see the way this, like, stuff that started 6 years ago, it's kind of all getting weaved together. A lot of partners involved, both businesses, you know, and other nonprofits, mm-hmm. agencies, to say, let's all figure out how we can work together to, you know, because no one organization or one person can, like, address the scope of need in a community, like, anywhere, no matter how, you know, what size the community is. But I really get energized by that, like, mm-hmm. weaving together this kind of fabric, you mm-hmm. know, that creates this, you know, community that we all need to be successful.
No, exactly. And the thing is, it's like, when the whole community is successful, the whole thing succeeds. But if you have people focusing on themselves and then being like, well, no, we don't need help with outside of town or right. whatever, you know what I mean? It's right. like, well, you're just setting your community up for failure right. because that's not a community. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Right. It's the idea that I actually believe my welfare is connected to the welfare of my neighbor.
Yeah.
It's not just about me and mine, which is kind of a very... You know, that's the whole close your garage door and shut the world out mentality. Where what I love about a neighborhood like this, mm-hmm. everybody's always outside. A lot of these places still don't have AC, so that's part of why, you know, in the summertime people are on
you
the porches.
You should see our AC in the back, man.
I can
You'd
feel
be
it.
Surprised.
I can feel it. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's literally has like a dent from a car hitting it and like looks like it was like built. It's probably the original unit from like the 70s. It's like, I'm like, I don't know how
it's
this
retro
thing is. Yeah, it's actually coming back into style this time.
It doesn't work well, but it's cool. It's cool. AC units are supposed to be cool.
Exactly.
So I love that about my community. We're about to actually, my wife and I, you know, this is a fun thing coming out of the pandemic. We're just going to have like a neighbor barbecue like the weekend after Easter where mm-hmm. our neighbors, it's going to be, you know, potluck style. I'll cook the meats, you know.
All in the front yard kind
of. Yeah, we'll take donations for that meat if anybody wants to. No. But go to Costco, right, get the burgers and the hot dogs and sausage, whatever.
Yeah.
And then everybody brings a dish. But just, it's fun. On my street, there's all kinds of different people. We have UC professors. We have families that have been there for like generations. We have like people that work with me mm-hmm. at Restore Merced. Like it's so fun.
I don't want to give out because I know where you live, but
long ways from here.
Yeah. is it cool to kind of see the transformation? So when you came here 6 years ago to now, is it kind of like, and especially like I feel like the past, you know, couple of years really, but like, I don't know, what are your thoughts on just like the transformation from when you got here in 2016 to 2022?
Well, it's crazy. Even downtown, right? We wanted to be downtown. This is the funny thing. My life is more of a walking life here in Merced than it ever was in San Francisco. Uh-huh. Like,
which normally people are always walking over
there. Yeah, that's supposed to be the city life, right? And, you know, a lot of my life is in downtown. I love downtown. But, you know, used to go try to eat somewhere on a Friday night, like 2016. That's not mm-hmm. that long ago. And it would still feel like a ghost town. Like, where are all these UC students that, you know, where is everybody?
Yeah.
You know, and people didn't want to go there. That's changed a lot in the mm-hmm. last 5 years where people are going out. It's always packed. There's great businesses downtown. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you got Lil Levin, J&R Tacos, like more and more great.
Pretty good burgers.
Pretty good. I still haven't gotten to have it.
Oh, really? It's good. It's really good.
I'm going to try it. I heard that they have the crispy, the one with like some crispy edges or something, fried edges on the burger.
So they're a smash burger. Exactly. They're real. It reminds me a little bit kind of like or In-N-Out style where it's like you got four things to choose from.
Yeah.
Order those. Yeah. Sometimes and it's good like that. Yeah. Keep it simple.
Yes.
It's a great tasting burger. That's like that's all and there's so many new businesses opening downtown. Right. So many.
And you know, one of the things we thought from the beginning, of course, living in somewhere like San Francisco.
Yeah, Smash Burgers. Is that Pretty Good Burgers Instagram?
That looks really good.
There we go. Yeah, it's real good.
You know, coming from San Francisco, there had already been a lot of, you know, gentrification change. The neighborhood I lived in there, Baby Hardens Point, tons of families who had been there for generations were just selling their houses and moving east mm-hmm. because they realized, even though my family owns this house, like we could sell it for $1.5 million.
Buy a house for $500,000.
Yeah, so move to Stockton, move to Lodi, move to Modesto. And then what's crazy is even doing our kids program, like I can't tell you, about 50% of the families we've been connected to through that have moved from Oakland in the last few years to here because of similar reasons, mm-hmm. right? Getting pushed out farther and farther east.
And the rent's only getting more and more expensive. And it's like, how is it being more and more expensive when so many people are leaving like the big cities? You know what I mean?
It's true.
It's because those renters and tenants are like trying to make up for the loss of it.
Right. But there's ways, you know, you can think about. So early on, one of our goals was, there is going to be good growth happening in Merced, and it has been happening. How do we make sure people can benefit from that, who maybe are currently the folks who would get pushed out? Mm-hmm. But how do we get, you know, train up employees who then can get some great jobs at a business like the El Capitan? Mm-hmm. And then they become a part of the growth, right?
Yeah, yeah,
in
exactly.
the community and benefit from that growth before it's like too late and mm-hmm. they're just kind of forced to move wherever they can.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's
so
true.
I've heard people say in California, you're either getting, you know, squeezed out or squeezed in. So like you're either coming to the middle of the state or you're leaving.
And, that's true. Hey, man, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So it's, so I think thinking about how we can make sure a lot of these folks, you know, benefit here from this exciting new growth. That's I really am passionate about.
No, that's really cool. Yeah. That's really awesome. And it's just so cool that you were able to come back to your hometown mm-hmm. and then provide the sense of community, the sense of things that maybe it had been longing for a while. And like, honestly, it's like somebody needed to come do it basically, you know what I mean? But it was just like, everyone kind of was like, somebody else will do it. And so was there like an exact moment where you realized, where you're like, okay, we're going to, I know you talked to your friend, talked about possibly doing some work in Merced, but was there something that really pushed you to like want to come back, or just the well-being of like of your future and your family and everything else?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of things. One, it was there were ways that I could see how we could slow down like our pace of life, you know? Yeah,
especially being in the big city.
Yeah, one of the crazy things when we first moved here is I didn't even know that every time it was my norm. So I didn't know that I was stressed every time I was driving places looking for parking and all that. It was just what I did all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I come back here and every time I was going somewhere, I was like, I feel so relaxed right now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I was like, there's a parking spot everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And people would be like, downtown parking's bad. I was like, I parked 5 feet away from where I went.
It's like, yeah.
Anywhere 3 blocks away is a great spot in San Francisco.
In San Francisco, you could park somewhere and you get, well, I got to walk a mile.
Yeah,
but
you get the
pretty
steps
close.
In every day. You get the steps in. But, you know, I think there was some of that, like there's appeal. Everywhere's a trade-off, right?
Yeah.
So there's things I miss, but there's things that we gain. The slower pace, being around some good friends and family, like having my, you know, raising kids with my parents close by. My kids are today out at my parents' house mm-hmm. in the country, like where there's cows, horses, like mm-hmm. getting to be around that, like even a day a week is a really cool thing, you uh-huh. know? But then also I realized that like there's nowhere else I could go that it would be a brand new place to me anywhere else that I go.
Yeah.
This is a place I actually love, even mm-hmm. if I have a, you know, at times like a contentious relationship with it, because who doesn't with the place you're from, you know? That's what every coming of age movie is about.
Exactly. It's about leaving your town.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what American Graffiti is about. Yeah. I don't have to watch it.
I can't even tell you what it's about. I can't tell you the storyline. I just know that they're traveling around cars.
They do drive-bys and then they get mad at their hometown. It's good. We should do movie takes. Can I get in on that
podcast? Movie takes. Just commentary
that we've
on the
never
movie.
Seen. Just commentary on a commentary.
Bring up a couple movies and we'll tell you what we think they're about.
Yeah.
And American Graffiti, there's a graffiti everywhere.
Everywhere. And it's all American flags. It's all the stars and stripes. It's crazy.
It's like, it's like Patriots, but they're also defacing the city.
Yeah, no respect and respect coincide, you know?
American Graffiti, you guys. That's what it's
that's
about.
That's what it is. Go watch it this weekend. George Lucas did it.
Yeah, George Lucas. Yeah,
it's got some Star Wars stuff
yeah,
in it.
Yeah,
too.
It does. Luke's in it and Leia and Chewbacca. Dude, so.
Driving cars.
Exactly. And Jeremy Renner, because he's from Modesto as well.
Yeah,
we're getting everybody.
He's a baby. He was a baby, but he was good in that. So serious, even as a baby.
No, so I was thinking about while we're talking, though. So what I wish that the United States would do, how many people are incarcerated in America? I know that's a fucked up question, but mm-hmm. but we have so many people, and it's like you're saying, I really like that you're working with jails and going into them, because it's like, if you go look at other people's prisons and things like that in other countries, it's like their jails are literally there to help like refacilitate people back into the work world. So when they do come back out, let's say 15 years later, they've already had job experience. They're already doing these things where America is kind of just dog eat dog. You go there, you come out and you have a black mark in your record. It's like, well, what's the point of doing all that time if you're still going to have mm-hmm. basically to do more time? You know what I mean?
Right.
So what kind of was the idea of you kind of like going to the prisons and helping those people out, getting ahead of the curve basically?
Right. Well, one of the things, this is actually something I feel like I'm going to credit it to that friend, Monica Grassley, that uh-huh. runs Lifeline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Earlier. I can't remember though if it's exactly hers, but we'll give it to her right now. But the idea that you're not defined by your worst mistake,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a really important. That thank goodness that's true of all of us, right?
Yeah.
Because we've all made some pretty big mistakes,
yeah.
And if that's what like everyone saw, that's the scarlet letter we wore everywhere we went. Like that wouldn't be great,
yeah.
You know?
No, it wouldn't.
And so I think that's true for anyone. And
everyone has moments in their life when they're like, oh, when they think about it.
Totally. One of my heroes is a guy named Brian Stevenson. Have you heard about him? The movie Just Mercy. I have seen that one. Michael B. Jordan. Everything Michael B. Jordan's in, you should watch. I'll just say that right now.
Yeah, but he's a really good basketball player. I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's good. Yeah,
yeah, Michael B. Jordan, best basketball player.
It's
look
about,
it up.
Yeah,
he's
it's
also
called The
in
Last
movies.
Dance. It's called The Last Dance. but no,
it's Just Mercy.
But Brian Stevenson, here's who his story, right? African American, grew up in Virginia. Actually, schools were desegregated when he was in elementary school.
Wow.
He went to a university called Eastern, then he went on to
this
Harvard Law.
Right,
that's him, Equal Justice Initiative. No one knew who he was for the first 30 years of his career, because when he finished at the top of his class in Harvard Law School, he moved to rural Alabama to represent people on death row who could be given the death sentence without legal representation. And that law only changed within the last 10 years because of the work that he's been doing. But he said everyone deserves to have an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's somebody who holds the tension really well of recognizing, people make real mistakes that have real consequences. And at the same time, that's not the fullness of who they are as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And he's given his life to that work. So I just, in the very smallest ways, try to follow in footsteps of people like this.
Yeah, and doing that within your own community.
In
your
own community, where that was part of the move even, right? Like, Merced's not really on the map in a sense, right? But like, if anything, that's to me the front lines of this work, where in San Francisco, there's a lot of great people doing great work. And that doesn't make it not worth it. It is. But here, it felt like, This is a community that maybe doesn't have some of those resources, some of those programs, some of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, for someone to fall back on. And so why not come and try to do that here with other great friends and people like Caleb and others? And so mm-hmm. And I just feel like I've seen it time and again. When you get to know the people that have worked with us, like, and you might look at what is on their past record, you're like, that is not you,
yeah.
You know? And I know the real them.
Yeah.
And there's a mixture of things going on that we're still all trying to understand as a society, right? Whether it's like mental illness, the ways that we're impacted by substance dependency, how all these things kind of come together, right? Trauma, mm-hmm. how those shape who we are. And so really, this is the thing. The world is incredibly complex. Human beings are incredibly complex. Our minds don't like that. We want it to be black and white. So our minds for us try to categorize things, try to categorize people, like all good, all bad.
Yeah.
Let me make
yes,
life simple
no.
because I don't like living in tension and complexity all the time.
Yeah.
The problem with that is life. And so if we're going to find like solutions that really have like long-term change or transformation, they have to deal with the complexities of the world, like the complexity of being a human. We're complex, all of us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're mixtures of good and bad. Like, you
everybody.
Know, everybody is. And so for us, I mean, obviously that's just a part of why we'd want to work with someone who maybe doesn't think that they still have that good in mm-hmm. themselves, but to help them see, no, you were still made for something. And I love this. Let me just, if I can be a preacher for just one second.
Go ahead.
In the Psalms, these are the oldest, these are like the hymn books, you know, of God's people, thousands of years old. Psalm 139 talks about this idea that, God, you knew me in my mother's womb. Before I was even, when I was still like formless, you knew me. You know me better than I know myself. You named me. And it gets at this unique thing of what it is to be human that we all long for, which is to be fully known mm-hmm. and fully loved. Because oftentimes we feel like if we're fully known, no, we're not going to be loved by mm-hmm. anyone. And if someone is able to love us, they must not know the fullness of who I am, you know? And instead, what actually the good news in that passage is that from God towards each of us, before you've done a single good thing, you're fully loved.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true for the rest of your life.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, that's what I'd want someone to know who's getting out of a long prison sentence. That's what I'd want someone to know who's in jail. That's what I'd want someone to know who's coming off the street trying to get out of a meth addiction.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is to know this has been true of you and it's still true of you. And we, as your family here at Restore Merced, get to show you day in and day out that it's true of you. We get to embody that reality to mm-hmm. you as we walk through life together, you know?
So yeah, no, I agree.
That's the stuff that gets me excited. Sorry for that.
No, that was, no, I like that. That was great. And so how did, when did you kind of discover Brian Stevenson?
Well, I actually discovered him. I used to love listening to this guy. His name is Tony Campolo, and he's like an Italian inner city Philadelphia pastor who would be in the mob if he wasn't a pastor.
Talking to me?
Yeah, Tony Campolo. And he would talk about, he'd actually talk about in this sermon, two of his old
he
former
looks like
students.
A mob boss.
Oh yeah, you could see it. You could see it. But he would talk about in this sermon two former students. He teaches at Eastern University where Brian Stevenson went to school.
Really?
But he said, I had these two former students. One of them was like, you know, part of his basketball team at the school and was going to go to med school. And what he'd say was, I'm going to be a doctor that does good work in the world, you know, like God's work in the world. He's like, I ran into that student on the streets of New York City 10 years later. And I said, what are you doing? He goes, I'm a doctor. He goes, that's great. What kind of medicine do you practice? He goes, I'm a plastic surgeon and do boob jobs. You know, he's like, that is not God's work. He goes, he makes women feel terrible about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, what it looks like. He goes, what the kingdom of God looks like is my former student, Brian, who after he graduated the top of Harvard Law School, instead of taking the best jobs offered him by all the best firms, moved to rural Alabama and represented the poor on death row.
Yeah.
And so that was when I first heard of Brian. And I didn't know till his book came out years later that Brian was Brian Stevenson.
Oh,
and then he became
really?
Big. He's got TED Talks that are so good. He talks about being proximate uh-huh. to need. He has a wonderful TED Talk about that. I actually hear him speak when we were in San Francisco through this like NPR program that was filmed there. And then he even came to Google while my wife was there to speak. And so he actually created this thing in called the Lynching Memorial in the South in Birmingham, Alabama. And the idea is that they have the name of every person they know of, and some of them are nameless, actually, who was lynched in the city that happened in. And his whole thing is like we can't deal with our future until we deal with our past.
That's real.
And he talks about how you walk through the streets of Germany today and in Berlin, and you'll see bricks on the street in front of a house with the Star of David on it. If there was a Jewish family that had died from that house in the Holocaust, because Germans don't want to forget the story so that they don't return to it.
Well, it's like how they didn't. It's not like they demolished the concentration camps or anything like that. Right. They have them there for almost as memory.
Yes, like, because it's painful, but it's a necessary painful, right? Uh-huh. And that's his idea. And what he wants to see is each one of those hanging things symbolizes an experience of lynching. He wants for those towns to come claim these, take them back to their towns and put them on display in like the town square.
In a
square,
way to deal with the past.
To say, let us never return
it's
there.
It's almost like
right?
America never did deal with the slavery thing. It was a fight the whole time till like the civil rights in the 60s, you know what I mean? Which is crazy. But it's like, it's like almost like we never dealt with our past. We just kept on focusing forward. And as you see in today's society, how everything is integrated, that like, obviously there is still ties to the past that is not inhibiting us from going.
Well, stories keep playing out, right? No matter how old they are, they continue to unfold over time, right? Mm-hmm. My family's story in El Nido with my immigrant grandparents that came from Italy right after World War I and started farming there. My grandfather, who only spoke Italian when he went to kindergarten and kept growing. Like that story keeps shaping our family even generationally, even ways that my kids don't even realize, right? And that's true just for every human that's ever lived anywhere. I think that there's a reason why it still should be and is called the American experiment, because there is no other country that's ever tried to do exactly what we do, which is blending people from all over
everywhere.
The place and saying, how do we come up with a common shared identity? You know, like you go to, of course, who doesn't, like what all the Scandinavian countries and the great stuff that they offer there. But those are very mono, like, cultural places,
too. Yeah, I always start to, people are always like, well, why is America, like, all, like, like, you know, it's like, it's more, I feel like we're basically a whole bunch of, I mean, we are a whole bunch of states together, but it's like we're a whole bunch of countries under one country.
Right.
Each state has its own, like, identity, its own culture, people from, and then people, you'll go somewhere on the East Coast and people are like, you're from California, you know what I mean? It's like, we're a different person than they are, you know what I mean? So it's really hard. I always try to explain that to other people. It's like, I just don't understand why don't you guys have like universal health care or like do it. And I'm like, I'm sure we could find the budget in somewhere in there.
Right.
Considering we're just printing money. But but it just...
We got the budget.
Yeah, well, during the pandemic, they're like, no, yeah, here, just keep buying stuff. Keep buying stuff. It's like, but do we have that money? Like, it doesn't matter. Just here. Go buy some stuff. Stay happy in your house.
Have some Bitcoins, too, while you're at it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's but, you know, I think it's a worthy experiment. Like, it's worth continuing to try. I personally, even as a minister, I think that's what the kingdom of God will one day be, is this idea of people of every tribe, tongue, and you know, nation coming together, dealing with, you know, all of our collective and individual paths, and but finding healing in it, you know, rather than war.
Sorry, what does that say, Duffy? It says, or you can make it bigger if you want. I think it was a Command Plus, right? Or no? America is referred to as a social experiment. What does that phrase mean? All people of different races and cultures were living together and trying to get along, but they had a difficult
time. That is put so that my first grade daughter can understand.
Yeah, exactly. What that means. I was like, you're a little more wordy than this.
Yeah, well, that's the story of my life too. A little too wordy.
Well, I feel like I'm very wordy, but I don't know where when I start a thought, I have no idea where I'm ending that thought. So it's just like sometimes I'll be like, and I'll start asking a question, and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm gonna ask this person right now.
So what's your favorite color?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, good, man. No, you do a great job with it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a process. Especially like this podcast it's helped me talk to people and think of questions and think of things to say that's in a more natural way. But it's also very hard sometimes, like, because I make it a point to always listen to every single one of my podcasts afterwards. Because some people, like, that I know that do podcasts, that they don't really listen to them. And so you got to, if you want to, like, kind of grow as a host or grow as...
The same thing.
And I used to always say, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And I still do. Like, I'm going to do it. Filler words. All those things. We're all going to have them. But I don't know. This podcast has taught me, it's taught me more than I ever. And like, so you're kind of talking about, I don't know what it was in the pod and while we were talking earlier, something about how you kind of feel like you like kind of feeding off people's energy, or like when I have these podcasts, what I do is I kind of feel recharged every time. I feel like I had a great conversation. I learned something about my community. I had a good conversation, and it just keeps me feeling like, hey, you're on track doing something that is purposeful, that is unique, that people do like. And like I was saying earlier, every now and then I get messages like, hey, like I move. Something I never thought that would happen from this podcast is people who move away listen to this podcast. And it's like, because they get to see people in their community and see how their community is doing. Yeah.
Bring them back.
Exactly. No, but yeah, I had this chick reach out to me, and she said like a really nice like statement saying like, I hope you blow the fuck up. Like, I've never seen anything like quality like this coming out of the Valley. Just something like, and it's just like,
it was a good blow up. At first I was worried.
My dad was like, what does she mean? And I was like, no, it's like a good one, Dad. He was like, what do you mean? What does she mean by that?
Is this a threat? Should I be concerned?
There's a bomb in the building. No, but it's cool because we have sponsors, but it's more like, and we haven't tried to do like a lot of podcasts with the sponsors where affiliate links, you know, and things like that. And it's like, because this podcast is about the Central Valley and focused around the Central Valley, it's like, I want the sponsors to be from the Central Valley. I don't want to be like, you know, go to Foursquare, that's what it's called. Like, you know, like all these other ones,
it's
all these other podcasts.
Game, though. Yeah. That's a great game, underrated. Yeah. That's where Spikeball got all its roots.
What Foursquare used to have, like, there's going to be a million rules when you're a kid. You're like, because once you'd be king, you're like,
you get to decide.
You're like, crags, typewriter, cherry bombs, like all these things. Yeah. But with the podcast, it's like we're making minimal money. So people think that because we have a studio, because we look professional, that we must have some money backed behind this. You know what I mean? It's like, no, we're
Bezos.
We have some pesos over here. We're not Jeff Bezos. We are a pesos over here.
Jeff Bezos is his cousin.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we have him funding us. No, but it's just cool because like this is like this is a community. This is an American experiment as well. You know what I mean? It's its own thing.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it brings people like you on the podcast and people together, people who, like, I would never, not never, but some of the people, it's like, I would never sit and have an hour and a half long conversation with you if I didn't invite you on this podcast and talk to you. And each time, it's kind of cool because, like, yeah, we kind of knew each other. We kind of know each other and we know of each other, but we don't, it's like, we don't sit down and have a conversation like this, you know? And so it's cool that I get to have this conversation with you for basically the first time, and other people get to listen to it too, and they get to see two people in their community coming together. Yeah. And I think for far too long you didn't see that. There's no outlet of good stuff in the Central Valley. Yeah. And so
it's good.
That's why I was glad to have you on, Matt. Thank you so much for coming on. Wouldn't you give people your guys' socials and everything for Restore Merced?
Yeah. So it's just that's a good question.
Restore
Merced. You find us on Instagram and Facebook just as Restore Merced.
Restore Merced. And then
don't put Restored, the thrift store.
Yeah.
Which is great people, but that's not us. And also the Restore Habitat for Humanity store in Atwater. We get people coming by our office all the time being like,
do we drop this off?
They just start walking in and they're just like, hey, yeah, I'm just here to shop. And I was like, well, I don't really have much for sale, but give me an offer and I'll let you know if I'm willing to part with it. You know, you can have my chair, sure.
That's funny. That's funny.
But Restore Merced.
Restore Merced. Yeah. And gotcha. Well, Matt, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, sir.
Of course. I really, really appreciate it. It's been fun. We'll have to do this again.
Definitely. Definitely.
This is it. Real talk. What not?
Real talk. That's it.
Real talk.